DS United, the premier Cold Fusion Conference by TerraTech Programming. Created by developers for developers.
All right, I'm getting the start sign from the back, so I'm guessing we're ready to go. My name's Adam Lehman, and I'm going to be presenting on making government websites accessible. Going to focus a little more on 508, the actual laws that we need to adhere to towards federal government. About 10 minutes ago, I did a little survey, and it seems like most of you guys work for federal or state or local government, so you can see definitely these sort of laws affect you. Just an introduction. My name is Adam Lehman. I work at the U.S. Department of State. I also run the Adobe user group there. I've been doing that for about 2 years now. I'm a senior developer with the IRM Business Center, which is a fee-for-service organization located within the Department of State, and we do offer software development solutions to other branches of the Department of State. One of my only publicly available applications I've worked on is the OSAC.gov website, probably one of the largest in-house custom websites built in the Department of State. And so much of my 508 experience comes directly of making sure everything was nice and clean for this website. I'm also a certified advanced Cold Fusion developer. I've been working with CF and the web for roughly about 10 years now, which putting it on a frame seems a lot longer. So making things accessible. There's a CF application tag called accessible equals true, and that's pretty much it. We're done. So thanks for coming. No. This is just a joke. They're not actually doing this in Scorpio at all. There's a little more to it than that, especially when it comes to HTML and browsers and screen readers and how they render. So what we're really going to talk about is accessibility, what it really means in general. Some of the assistive technologies that are out there, most people are familiar with screen readers, but that's not the only thing that disabled people are using. We'll talk about the two different guidelines, and we're going to focus on Section 508. We're going to run through each guideline, talk about what it actually means. Less about implementation and more about kind of making you aware of the rules. I think that when most of you guys kind of know what these rules are, it's a lot easier to develop your applications moving forward and your websites moving forward because it's easier to adhere to these things. So what is accessibility? Accessibility is about enabling people to get access to the same content that they would be able to if they had, if they weren't disabled, if they had all. Without having a disadvantages for people who are disabled versus people who aren't. And you know that 1 out of 10 people are actually considered disabled. Technically, I'm considered disabled because I have to wear glasses and I can't see without them. So even things such as, small text, it can drastically affect whether people can actually access your site and see the content. So there are over 30 million people in the U.S. with disabilities, and so that's a very big number. So as part of those benefits, you're going to get a larger audience when you start to support accessibility. You're going to get those 30 million people can now actually access your site a lot easier, and they can use your applications a lot easier. Plus, you're going to have support for more devices, because we're going to talk about using standard XHTML and CSS. An accessible site is a lot easier to use. You've made it easier to use for people with disabilities, and people without disabilities can actually use your site even easier. And two, it's going to help you kind of enforce the separation of your design from your content. But accessibility, it's important beyond the U.S. government. The private sector websites are also liable to the same accessibility laws because of discrimination. The Sydney Olympics was a very good example. When they put up the Sydney Olympics website, which is has nothing to do with the federal government, a couple of people who were disabled went to the sites and they couldn't get the scores for the games and they couldn't get this. And so they went and complained directly to the Olympics, and they were held liable in court, and the Olympics had to actually go back and redo their entire website to make it accessible. And I'm not sure what those numbers were, but I remember reading, I think it took them 14 months to develop the entire site, but after the lawsuit, it took them 8 months to make it accessible. So it was very significant because they didn't do it from the beginning, and so they had to put in a lot of work afterwards. And almost any corporate or public website is susceptible to this because there's discrimination laws in almost every country. So several countries also outside the U.S. have their own accessibility laws, especially a number of countries in Europe. And a lot of them are based off of the W3C's guidelines, and we'll talk about those a bit later. There are a number of assistive technologies out there beyond screen readers, such as braille readers, screen magnifiers, even just using a custom CSS style sheet every time you go to a site to override the one that they have, as well as alternative input devices. Screen readers are definitely the most common. Screen readers help blind people be able to navigate the web without having to see your images and see the text on the screen. A couple of the popular ones are JAWS, Homepage Reader, and Windows Eyes. JAWS is probably the industry leader right now, but at the same time, it's also the most expensive. I think it's last time I checked, it's between like $900 to $1,200 for a copy of JAWS. IBM offers one called Homepage Reader, and it's actually really easy to use, and I'd recommend using that when you're doing web development to kind of test on it, because it's also a lot cheaper, and I think it's about like $140. Both JAWS and Homepage Reader actually support accessibility within PDF and Flash Player as well. So those two are very important. Braille readers. These aren't as common, but they are out there. And what a Braille reader does is it actually has a spinning wheel, and it'll push up the pins on this wheel as the reader reads the text, usually in conjunction with the screen reader, it'll translate everything into Braille. There's also software that you can run on top of your browser with like screen magnifiers and custom CSS. And screen magnifiers kind of give you like pretty much what they say is a little magnifying glass on your screen to help you enlarge text so you can see it if you have trouble seeing. And then you can have also custom CSS style sheets, which are defined by the user to like change the size of the text and how the page can be rendered. And these will override whatever you're putting on. There's also alternative input devices. And no, this isn't the prototype for the latest MacBook, but this is these cameras are used on top of these computers to actually sense eye movement for people who are paralyzed. So when they're looking across the screen, the cameras are tracking where their eyes are looking to kind of bring focus there. There's also a couple things like touch screens, foot control mice, joysticks, and then the puff and suck tubes, which allows them to like blow and suck to give the yes or no options. Within a computer. These are a little less common, but so you should be aware of them as far as they can be used actually to browse your websites. So there's two different guidelines for developing accessible contact. The one you've probably heard about a million times over is Section 508. And that's because in 1998, the U.S. government passed a law that said that all federal websites and all local, federal, state websites need to adhere to these guidelines and for any publicly accessible sites. The W3C, not to be outdone, and they love putting out standards, well, they came out with their own, the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. And it is actually a much more rigid standard. There's a lot more to it, and they are a little more focused. But now the WGAC is not a law, so you don't have to follow them. And as you'll see as we get into the presentation, they overlap and match up with a lot of what's in Section 508. So Section 508 requires that individuals with disabilities who are seeking information or services from the federal agent have access to the same information, or at least comparable access. That's to say that, you know, it may be a lot easier if you didn't have disabilities, but we need to make sure that at least the information is there for both sides. And it's not like, you know, incredibly differently or incredibly harder for someone with disabilities to get to that same information. There's only 16 guidelines, and they pertain to the web, and all 16 of them need to be adhered to if you're going to be compliant. Now, the WGAC has they have 14 guidelines, but it's actually 65 different checkpoints. And they have this priority measure from priority 1, 2, and 3, where priority 1s you must do if you want to be considered accessible. Priority 2 is the, you know, you really should do this, and priority 3 is like if you just want to go all out, this is the one, you'll follow everything in here. XHTML and CSS. This is probably the best thing that's ever happened to the web as far as accessibility, because now we can actually start to really use some meaningful markup, and we can separate out our presentation, which gets in the way of these screen readers and these assistive technologies. And because of this content separation, it makes your sites a lot more accessible with a lot less work. Since HTML uses a stricter structure, it's easier for these tools to process. Tables, on the other, with using the old-fashioned way of tables to use layout, can really mess up a screen reader because a screen reader is looking at a table as a data. And so it's going to come and it's going to read through how the table is set up rather than how you really want your presentation, how it looks like on the screen. So the foundations for building an accessible site is that you really want to start with accessibility. You don't want to have to address this later. If you begin thinking about accessibility when you begin your project and you begin developing your website, you'll find it's so much more easier. It's just it almost become common knowledge just to kind of keep working like this. It's when you need to go back. That's when it's like the Sydney Olympics and you spend 8 months trying to force accessibility into something. If you start out the gate, it's almost like second nature, and you won't even realize that you're doing it anymore. So you want to use those W3 standards as possible. And I don't mean the Content Accessibility Guideline. I actually mean the DOM standards that they're pushing at. Because the more compliant you stay to as far as your XHTML is, the more compliant the screen reader is going to be able to read these a lot better. So you're going to want to separate all your presentation out with CSS. That gets it out of the way, and all your presentation out of the way of the screen readers and these other accessible technologies. And so you want to also use meaningful markup and structure your content appropriately. Meaning, you know, if you're going to have a header, use an H1 tag. Don't use a span tag with a class that says header1. Because most of these screen readers are also aware of meaningful content. And certain ones will allow you to actually tab through your headers and tab through the H1s and tab through paragraphs if they don't want to listen on. So using more meaningful content, using the tags that are meant to be used for it, helps out a lot. As far as images, audio, and video, you want to provide alternatives or non-text content. For images, you want to provide textual descriptions for everything. Audio can be a bit tough. Usually you're going to want to have to transcribe everything that you're putting in audio and video using closed captioning. There's also the issues of color and contrast. Lots of people have slight color blindness where they can't actually see strong contrast. So you're going to want to make sure that when you're designing sites, you're using colors that actually have really strong contrast, or otherwise they could be blended together. And then you're going to want to focus on your navigational methods. Navigating with the screen readers is a very cumbersome process because, as you can imagine, it's just reading from the top and going all the way down. And so if you have your header on the top, or header and a menu on the top of every page, well, they have to listen to that header and menu on the top of every page. We're going to talk about some ways to improve that. So the Section 508 guidelines. I'm going to step through each guideline, and we're going to talk about what it actually means. The guidelines are lettered, I think A through wherever it ends. And so guideline A is the text equivalence. This is the one that says you want to use the alt tag everywhere. If the tag in HTML supports the alt tag, use it. Put some sort of description of what this tag is doing. For images especially, you want to put a short text description of what this image is or what it's representing. So if I am displaying my company logo, I want to put in the alt tag, oh, this is the company logo. So the screen reader knows or can relay that to the user. For bigger things that are for other objects, such as charts and graphs that have like a much more detailed explanation to them, you can use the long description attribute, which is long TESC, and to link to an external HTML page or text page. And if the screen reader chooses to read that, it can pull a much larger description, and it's not making your HTML much longer. So your alt text in general should be short and simple. The last thing you want to have is like this alt text that's just like sentences and sentences and sentences describing something, because it's very annoying to kind of go through these things. And when you need to use that longer description, use the long descript tag. You want to make sure that you want to capitalize and space your letters, especially in an abbreviation or an acronym, because a screen reader could come to an abbreviation and try to pronounce it like a word. Capitalization is also very important just in sentences in general, because screen readers put a bit of enunciation into when it's speaking. So using capitalization, using the correct punctuation actually will help it pronounce and flow a little better for the user. Using descriptive names when you're using your images. Don't name everything like image 1, image 2, image 3, because when all else fails, if they can't read the alt text, the screen readers will fall back to what the image name is, and so it'll read that for them. So it's a good idea, I mean, especially just for development, to kind of have some meaningful names even at your file name level. And again, you want to apply the alt text wherever possible. You'd be surprised how many tags in HTML actually support the alt text. So drop it in wherever it is, and at the same time you can do the title text or title tag or attribute as well. Sure. Spacer GIFs. Spacer GIFs is a good question. So if you're using a lot of spacer GIFs, which are transparent, you don't want the screen reader to hiccup on it. So you want to put an alt attribute, but you want to make it blank. If you don't make it blank, it'll try to read the name usually. So if you put it at least blank and it's, just quotes, it'll skip over those spacer gifts. Because you definitely also don't want to put alt, this is a spacer gift, because then they'll just hear that over and over and over again. So the next guideline, guideline B, is about synchronized multimedia. So equivalent alternatives for any multimedia presentation needs to be synchronized with the presentation. So that means that if you have streaming video or any video on your site, you want to make sure that it's closed captioned so that people with disabilities can still hear or get the text reader version of the video that you're going through. Since Flash Player 7, there's been some tremendous support for accessibility, and it's amazing how easy accessibility really is in Flash Player 7. But even Flash Video will support a couple of the captioning standards that are out there, so screen readers will even be able to read the video or read the closed captioning from. And the way that works is it uses synchronized XMLs based on. So you write these little XML files that go with the presentation with timings, and Flash Player will read them back out for you. It's pretty cool stuff. This is the use of color. Like I said before, the contrast is very important. Section C says that you need to take some better care of the contrast that you're using. And someone with a color blindness wouldn't be able to make out the boat there, and well, color's not too great on this projector, so you can kind of even get a better idea. So you want to make sure that you're using very contrasting colors, that you're not using like a light blue text on a white background, because it could be look almost invisible to someone with slight color blindness. I don't know any third-party tools offhand, but Sandy does.
IBM has one called A-Designer.
A-Designer?
Which specifically deals with color contrast.
Okay, I've found a couple of tools.
No, it is a downloadable tool.
Right, I've found a couple online tools where you can actually type in your URL. I should have probably included those references to a site, and it'll do it'll take five or six different screenshots based on the different, based on your different levels of color blindness, so you can kind of see. I also use the poor man's trick when I'm designing my sites in Photoshop and just go to grayscale and kind of like move the contrast down to see at least how far the levels will go. And that, from a design perspective, should give you a really good idea of where you're going. It's not going to be 100% accurate, so you should definitely check out some of these online tools or IBMs. Content structure. This is where we get more into, if you're writing strict W3C and you're following those standards, then you're already following D. And that's saying that the documents should be organized and they should be readable without the style sheet. So if the style sheet disappears one day, it may not look pretty, but at least the content should be organized with your menus up top and your subsections and how it should be without a style sheet. And that's just because screen readers aren't going to apply a style sheet. They just don't really care about them. Image maps are covered in E and F. Now, E says that you need to make sure that you have redundant text links for each active region of a server-side image map. I don't think too many people are using server-side image maps. I think the last time I saw one being used was in a GIS-based application, which has its own set of complications for making it 508 compliant. But in F also actually says don't use server-side image maps whenever possible and use client-side. And screen readers are pretty good reading the client-side image maps, but just make sure you're using the alt text, your long descriptions, in the same regions that you would just with any other image. Section G and H talk about tables. Tables specifically saying, you really should only be using tables to display data, not to be displaying layout. It's not as always as easy as it sounds. Sometimes you at least have one table to define your base, and you use CSS and positioning for the rest of them until all the browsers can agree on a clean implementation, or at least IDE, I guess, follows the rules. We're kind of stuck with tables to a certain extent. But when you do use tables for data, you want to make sure you're using the appropriate tags. You want to use the T-head, the T-body, the TH tags, because you want to make sure that your headers are actually associated with the data. So when I use a TH tag, I'm saying, okay, this is the header for this column. So when the screen reader gets down to the bottom and it says what the value is, it's going to be able to associate it with its header. If you're just using the regular TDs to make your headers on the table, it's not going to know the difference between being data or being a label. So it's very important to actually use the T-head, the T-body, the TH in those. And you should make your tables as simple as possible, especially try not to do a lot of the collapsing cells or call spans and row spans, stuff like that. Just makes it a little easier to predict which way the screen readers are going to be running through. Frames. just in general, there's probably, you shouldn't be using frames anyway. Just, I think it's one of those things we've kind of inherited from the old days. But when you're using frames, make sure you're using alt text to describe which of these frames are. So if you've got a frame for navigation, make sure you've got an alt text on the frame tag that says this is the navigation frame and this is the content frame. Because that'll at least help the user navigate away from the navigation directly to the content. And again, alt text, alt text, alt text. J is what I call the spinning logo guideline, and that basically just says, whatever you do, don't make the page flicker more than 4 times in 1 second. Aside from probably being the most annoying website ever, if it flickered more than 4 times in one website, it could actually cause seizures. And I don't know, most of you, if anybody's out there playing video games, you also notice most video games will give you that little seizure warning at the beginning saying, all right, we're about to flicker the screen 4 or 5 times. That's because many people are susceptible to seizures, right? I believe actually it was Pokemon back in the day that was causing this big problem. But it's actually very hard to make your web page flicker between 4 and 4 seconds, or 4 times in a second. So you actually almost have to go out of your way to make this happen. So those guidelines you really don't have to worry too much about. And then Section K, the fallback. This is like when all else fails, just make another page that's completely compliant. So if you just can't seem to get, you know, whatever's going on the page, that it's just impossible to make it 508 compliant as far as using the correct Symantec, then just make a text-only version of the page and make sure it's accessible. So make sure there's like a little text-only link on this page and say, if you need to see this, you know, and this is how we can actually get around, you know, making our sites 100% accessible. Because when we can't get it to work every other way, we can still fall back. It's not the greatest idea because then you start to have to maintain 2 different pages, and it's important to note that that guideline says, you know, your text-only page needs to be just as up-to-date as your other page, but it definitely helps out. L talks about scripting, and basically when your page is utilizing a scripting language, you need to make sure that anything that's changing on the page can be reflected in the screen reader. And as Sandy mentioned before, was I going to talk much about AJAX? AJAX is it's very hard to make it accessible, but it's also very easy depending on how far you're going with AJAX. I mean, you can do a lot of things with AJAX. And I guess the bottom line is, if you're radically changing the content of your page, you need to make sure that the screen reader is understanding these pages are changing. You need to provide alternative ways to get that content up there. Because most screen readers aren't going to follow that you're doing a rollover or something like that, and then a new menu has appeared. Plugins. M deals with plugins, and plugins basically says anytime you use an applet or an ActiveX control or one of these things, or even the Flash Player, that you're going to need to provide some sort of alternative, because most of these plugins are not going to be accessible. The Flash Player, however, is extremely accessible, but even then, you can use the no embed tag when you're embedding these applets or plugins and say, you know, to provide your alternative content. I mean, it's probably a pretty good information or a pretty good rule that if it's the critical information to your site, you don't want to put it in an applet, and you don't want to put it in a plugin. You want to put it in plain old HTML. But otherwise, you can always just create a text alternative. Ooh, went too far. Navigation. Navigation is very important, and one of the things that's the biggest problem with the screen reader is that it starts at the top of the page and it just starts reading from left to right until it gets to the bottom of the page. And most of us will put our navigation at the top or we'll put it at the left. And so anytime a user with a screen reader clicks on a page, the first thing he's presented with is the navigation yet again, even though he's trying to get to the content. So every time he's going to have to listen to your entire menu structure before he can get there. So a good thing to do is to be able to skip this navigation or give these people or give the screen reader the ability to say, all right, I already know what the navigation is, get me to the content. And what you can do is you can put an invisible GIF right before your navigation or at the beginning of your page. And the invisible GIF can be like 1 by 1 pixel. You know, no one else is going to see it. And you can wrap it in a link with an alt tag that says skip navigation. And when you do that, you can use an anchor tag just to push it to the next part of the content of the page. If you do nothing to make your site accessible, do this one tiny little thing, and it'll really improve the accessibility for people using screen readers, because it's just very time consuming to have to keep listening to menus over and over and over again. If you've broken out your navigation into certain sections, which then have sub elements, you can also consider putting section jumps in there as well. So they know what section they want to. They don't have to listen to every section in the navigation. The idea is to kind of make it so they don't have to listen to everything over and over and over and over again for every page. The extended section guideline. This is guideline P. And what this says that most of us, you know, I think the default session in ColdFusion is like 20 minutes. What this says is that, you know, people using these assistive technologies may take a lot longer to use a form than you would be able to just run through it, especially with these alternative input devices. So when your session, if there's a session there, and you need to make sure that it doesn't expire while they're on the form. So before your session expires, you can do a number of things, such as like put a pop-up window that says, you know, your session's about to expire, click here to continue. But you also want to explain in your form that, you know, there is a session here. You do need to complete this form within 20 minutes or you're going to be reset. So that's what this guideline is asking you to do. The N. N and for is the, it covers forms, and forms are probably where you're going to put a lot of thought into how they're going to be accessible, because forms are very, very, very tricky to make perfectly accessible. So anytime that you're going to design an electronic form, you need to make sure that you're using the right semantic, that screen readers can navigate through them correctly and understand what input equals what label. And to show you some examples. For instance, the label tag. I truly really never use a label tag too much up until I started doing a lot more of accessibility, and now I use the label tag even when it has nothing to do with accessibility, just because it works as far as meaningful markup goes. Use a label tag and you can specify a for attribute, and the for attribute is the ID of whatever input it's for, or it's referencing. And this is great for screen readers, because what it does is when the screen reader gets to the input, it can actually say, oh, okay, what label should I read aloud now that I'm on this input? Otherwise, the screen reader, the only thing it can do is default back to its name or the value or the name of that input field, and that's usually sometimes not the most descriptive. So you want to make sure that you can link labels directly to your input tags. And the same for it can be said for the text area, where we're using pretty much the same markup to link this label is for this text area. So when the text area is highlighted, the label is read aloud. Now, checkboxes and radio buttons provide a little different, because there's several of them, but they only really need to have one explanation. So you can use the field set tag to kind of group all of your inputs together, your checkboxes together, and then you use a legend tag to provide the overview instructions or the overview of the label. So my example here, we're picking colors, and my legend tag is wrapping the choose a color. And then in each input within there has its own label. So as the screen reader would come through, it would say choose a color, and then it would move on to the input tag, which then would reference its label tag and say blue, green, yellow. So this helps vastly, and really, as far as checkboxes go, if you don't, there's really not too many other ways to do this and make them actually accessible. Otherwise, you're not going to have the explanation for each one. And the same thing is done with radio buttons as well as check buttons. Select boxes work much like inputs and text areas, where you're just going to use the label for an ID to make sure that they're referenced. Some things that you should be aware of with select boxes, though, is it's very common to use select boxes with as a menu item. And so anytime someone selects something on an onChange, it redirects or it goes somewhere else. Well, that can cause havoc for a screen reader, because it's not, every time it goes, it has to read through each select so the user knows which side or which item to select. And if you have an onChange there that's going to relocate them after just reading one, they're only ever going to be able to read the first one. So as far as navigation using select boxes, it's really not going to be accessible if you go that route. So you need to be aware of that, that you know they actually have to read through each one, which actually fires off an on-change event. To improve the accessibility even further for these, you can actually use the opt group tags. Some of the screen readers are now supporting the opt group, and what the opt group will do is it'll group a bunch of options together as a certain group. So if we were talking about states and provinces, I could have a group of the U.S. states and a group of Canadian provinces. So that way the screen reader can skip ahead and say, well, I'm not in the U.S., I'm in Canada, so I don't need to listen to all 50 U.S. states. Creating forms using Dreamweaver, because I'll plug an Adobe product now. Dreamweaver is actually really good at helping you create these accessible forms. It'll actually prompt you to make it accessible if you've enabled it. It does a good bit of accessibility reporting that you can run against it. There are some third-party tools out there like Bobby, which is a very popular one, that'll run through your code and give you kind of an accessibility report. It'll tell you based on 508 or tell you based on the WGAC which ones you're not meeting. There's also a really good accessibility reference built into Dreamweaver in the reference panel, if you've ever seen that. In addition, Dreamweaver also help you validate to make sure your XHTML is compliant.
How do you enable Dreamweaver to?
I think it's under preferences. That's a tough one. It's under the preferences. There is an accessibility option. I'm not sure where exactly though, but it isn't. It is not enabled by default, or is it?
It is enabled.
Oh, okay.
Default.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Have you ever been had any success using CF form, Flash forms to get those accessible?
Yeah, CF form and Flash form is hard because what you're doing is asking Cold Fusion to be responsible for generating a form dynamically rather than having that kind of that integral that really tight control over it by doing it by hand. There it is. You should be able to use the accessibility tags with Flash forms, and I don't think that it's documented very well, but you should be able to still enable accessibility. But the problem is, and I'll explain with Flash, is you need to also include an accessibility library that isn't commonly included with Flash. And the sidetrack here, because I am actually getting close to the end of the slides, Flash is extremely easy to make accessible. It's night and day compared to HTML because they've actually thought about accessibility when they started with Flash Player 7 and putting an Ingrain there. And how it works is it includes another library called the Accessibility Library. That library normally isn't included because it slows things down just a bit to make everything accessible, so they don't do it by default. But once you include that, going through your items and your objects in Flash, it's as simple as saying enable or accessible equals true. It's really like very clear cut as far as that's concerned. And most of the leading screen readers now are very very good at reading Flash content and using Flash applications. So back to the Ajax conundrum. When you're looking to build these more complex apps with much better user interfaces, it's a lot easier to go the Flash route or the Flex route and have accessible applications with those UIs than it is to go the HTML route. Well, like I would say, because CF form is actually generating these forms for you, especially through the Flex engine for Flash forms, you don't actually have the ability to add every single attribute that you can imagine. I remember initially, and I really probably shouldn't comment too much on this because I'm not clear, because I really don't use CF form too often. I usually write straight forms. As far as the Flash forms are concerned, you should be able to include that library somehow and enable accessibility through those attributes. It might not be as simple as through a CF tag, but there should be a way under the hood.
We went to Macromedia and asked for their help on this, and they said that it was accessible, but we found out it was not.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Can't comment too much else. That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
So isn't that invalidation
in
process?
Correct. Right. Well, I mean, the biggest problem with accessibility isn't the browsers, it's really the screen readers. And so you're really trying to write to the best screen readers. And there isn't, and Microsoft does have a standard API. And so the best thing we can do is code towards the most common, the most standard. It's almost kind of how we code for browsers in general. As far as the 508 laws go, I mean, you really, and I mean, this is a personal personal thought on how I've dealt with it with the internal part of the state, is you just do as much as you possibly can. I think that you're more likely to say, okay, well, you haven't done anything. This is a blatant violation. But if you've really done as much as you can and you've tried to make it accessible to as many people as possible, I think you're going to be pretty safe. I don't think anyone's going to come back and say, well, this last 1% couldn't get to your website. Because it's going to be hard to just even to imagine every possible disability out there and how to make it accessible. So. Correct. Well, the reason that there was a lawsuit is because the Olympics initially said we're not even going to make it accessible. And that's why it kind of got to that level. It basically, this man complained, said, I can't get the sports scores. And they said, whatever, we don't care. You know, it's not our job to care. And that's when it became automatically a discrimination. And that's what the trial was about, and that's what the court case was about. It was about discrimination. It was about the Olympics saying, we're going to provide, you know, sports scores to everybody except for blind people. And that's the level it got to. I think that if you have a problem with this or with, you know, accessibility, or you know, you find that one user can't get to it, like I said, you can provide just a text alternative for that person. You can do it really quickly, and you're done. And you know, you don't have to escalate it any further. So.
You know, you were talking about text alternatives. Well, I mean, if you're using a CSS for the layout of your site, and your site is XHTML compliant, it's very easy to provide.
Correct.
For anybody that wants it.
Correct, correct. It is very, I mean, the more you stick to W3C standards, the easier this it really is.
There that they can click, and it's all text.
Correct. Because the people who are writing the screen reader software, they're basing it off of these W3C standards. Internal use? Yeah. Right. That's a very good point. Let's see. How could I answer this politically? Everything I've done, we do publicly. We make sure 508 is 100%. I work for an organization. We have an office within us who actually regulates 508 adherence throughout the entire Department of State. So we're held also to a little more scrutiny for all the internal applications that we build, a little more so than probably most of the people in the Department of State, because there's also, as far as regulatory bodies go, you can't be aware, this office can't be aware of every application that goes online on the internet. Now, they do things where they go and they search through the internet using screen readers, and every time they find something that's not working, their job is to kind of send out letters and go and work with these people. We also go through approval processes for every application, and part of that approval process before it goes live is making sure it's accessible. So we're moving more towards making sure all of our internal apps are accessible, but I can tell you that we haven't been in the last 5 years. It's a very more recent trend, and it's also because a presidential mandate about 2 years ago, 1 year ago, there are a couple things. One that said, you know, you all have to be .govs, no more .coms if you're government, but also said that now the 508 is going to be enforceable. Where before, it was kind of like the rule of the law, and there wasn't really too much of a penalty for not following it. Now the penalty is starting to come, and it comes in the way of losing funding, basically. As far as internal applications, I've built applications that I've known there's only going to be 4 users, and I know those people, I've met them, and I've written applications that were going to have thousands of users, and I couldn't anticipate what their needs are going to be. And so what we do is we try to use the most standard, you know, compliant XHTML we can. You follow all these guidelines in the beginning with your application. And for the most part, if you do think about it before you start building an application, before you start developing your view, you'll find that they're going to be a lot more accessible. Within the Department of State, we have an office.
And they
serve the general internet for them? No, they serve internally within the Department of State, our intranets, and any public Department of State websites. Their mission is to regulate Department of State. They're not a higher body.
Okay.
So, but I haven't worked in the other bureaus. I would assume you'd find the same everywhere else. I guess it depends. Is there you go. So, and the difference being that is how much teeth these organizations and offices really have internally. Because I think our office has had that office for quite a while, but they really haven't had any a muscle to them. So when they found something, it was more like a recommendation, not like an order to fix it. Someone over here? That's pretty much my discussion. I've got a couple of reference here for the Section 508 website, which ironically is actually a Cold Fusion website using Fusebox. Any questions? All right. Thank you guys for coming. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, there's so much, I don't know. It's hard to figure out what you want to do in 45 minutes. Right. Yeah, actually, 508.gov it would actually probably fail accessibility tests. Well, thank you very much. No, thank you.
Hi. I know it's not part of your job or anything like that. As long as I've heard about all these things about 508 compliant, I've always thought they shouldn't be pushing more for the screen readers to be more advanced.
I agree.
Instead of like limiting our developer, like talking to us and telling us not to use Ajax, instead of telling the screen readers
to get better. And that's actually the problem. I used to do a screen reader demo with this app, and the reason I did it, and I gave this presentation last year, and I gave a screen reader demo. But the screen reader software was so poor, JAWS, that $1,400, I couldn't even uninstall it. And it would mess with my Windows, and it would do all this horrible stuff.
Same thing. So I would always thought that we should be, in fact, the Congress should be pushing to make screen reader more advanced and forcing us not to use it.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You're exactly right.
So that's just crazy.
Because we're dealing really with screen reader problems, not with accessibility problems.
I'm always like, I can build that kind of site, but since I work with government, I cannot.
Right. Actually, she forwarded me a link 2 weeks ago about enabling accessibility for GIS applications for maps, and I'm just like, well, it's a bit ridiculous.
Thank you for listening, and we hope we will see you at CF United 2007. This has been a production by TerraTech Programming. For more information, go to www.cfunited.com.